Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Wicked Die Twice by William W. Johnstone and J. A. Johnstone. Narrated by John McLean. Chapter 1. When Town Marshal Glenn Larson reined up in front of the jailhouse on Dry Fork's Main Street very early on a Sunday morning in early July, a cold stone dropped in his belly. He could tell by the look on the dark, craggy face of his deputy, Henry Two Whistles, that trouble was afoot. As the older man, clad in a three-piece suit that hung a little loosely on his lean frame, stepped out through the jailhouse door, a fateful cast to his molasses dark eyes was undeniable. Not that Two Whistles was ever all that given to merriment. He was three-quarters Ute from southern Colorado territory, and he was true to the stoic nature of his people. As he closed the jailhouse door and turned to face Larson reining up before him on the marshal's sweat-lathered coyote-dun gelding, the old man rested his double-barreled Parker 12-gauge on his right shoulder. "Anyone hurt? Killed?" Larson asked before Two Whistles could say anything, the marshal's voice pitched with dread. Two Whistles frowned curiously, deep lines wrinkling the dark cherry tone of his forehead and spoken around his eyes. Larson canted his head toward his back trail. "I was on my way back to town last night when I met three Mill Iron ranch hands. I thought it was a mite odd to see Mill Iron hands heading back out to their headquarters so early on a Saturday night, and said as much. They told me that Talon Chaney and Hellraise and Frank Beecher had come to town and were sort of making all the stockhands homesick. They decided to cut out early and avoid getting caught in a lead storm." Two Whistles gave a grim, stony-faced nod. "That damn Cuthead Sioux is with them, too. Black Pot." "Gabriel Black Pot," Larson said as he swung down from his saddle. "Yeah, they mentioned him, too. He's an aptly named son of a devil, ain't he? There ain't one thing that ain't black about him, especially his heart." Henry pursed his lips. "How bad, Henry?" The old deputy lifted and lowered his left shoulder. "Not bad, this time. They came in late yesterday afternoon. Been holed up at Carlisle's place. All the ranch hands and everyone else in town know 'em well enough by now that they cleared out of Carlisle's as soon as Beecher's bunch bellied up to the bar." "Not great for business, are they?" "At least no one's dead. Not yet. They slapped around a couple of girls, made 'em dance with 'em while Carlisle played the piano, but they was drunk when they rode into town, so by 10, 11 o'clock, they went upstairs and passed out with a couple of Carlisle's doxies."
"That was nice of them."
Larson sighed. "When I heard they were here, I expected the worst." Two Whistles' thick-lipped mouth rose in a grim smile. "That would likely happen today, when they get going again. As Carlisle tells it, they're flush. And it don't look like they're gonna let any of that stagecoach money burn holes in their pockets." The three killers, along with the rest of their 20-man bunch, recently ran down a stagecoach hauling treasure from Deadwood to Sundance. They raped the women aboard the stage, killed the men, including the Jehu and the shotgun messenger, stole the gold and the ranch payroll in the strongbox, and ran the stage off a cliff. The gang split up the gold and separated. Larson had been surprised that Chaney, Beecher, and Black Pot had had the gall to show their faces in any town so soon after a holdup, but in a town so close to the scene of their crime most of all. On the other hand, he wasn't all that surprised. Those three killers in particular had reputations for being spit-in-your-face brazen about their wicked ways. Maybe they felt they'd earned the privilege. They were known to have killed three deputy U.S. marshals and a couple of sheriffs who tried to run them to ground over the years, and double that many bounty hunters who'd hounded the gang for the bounties on their heads. They probably hadn't hesitated to head to Dry Fork because they knew an unproven town marshal and his just as unproven old man half-breed deputy were manning the jailhouse these days. Glenn Larson and Henry Two Whistles had both been working out at the Crosshatch Ranch up until only 7 months ago, when the rancher they'd worked for, Melvin Wheelwright, died suddenly from a heart stroke. His family had sold the ranch to an eastern syndicate, and that company's head honcho decided to hire an entire new bunkhouse of hands, despite every one being as seasoned as any other 30-a-month and found cowpuncher anywhere in the territory. Funny folks, those tailor-dressed syndicate men, most of whom were foreigners, of course. Maybe that was the explanation right there. Two of those hands, given their time, a sack of grub and one horse each to ride away on, were Larson and Two Whistles. Henry had been the crosshatch cook since his bronco-busting days had gone the way of the buffalo, leaving him with a rickety left hip and a pronounced limp in cold weather. Larson and Two Whistles had gotten to be good friends over the 4 years they'd worked together at the crosshatch, even though Larson now being only 27 and Two Whistles somewhere in his 50s, though he'd never said where exactly, were separated by nearly 30 years in age. It just seemed natural that when the two lone wolves left the headquarters, and neither had anyone else in their lives, and nowhere else to go, that they'd ride nowhere together. The nearest town was Dry Fork, so they'd headed there for a drink or two to drown their sorrows. It just so happened the town had been in need of a new marshal and a deputy, and since no one else had seemed to want the dangerous jobs, here the two former crosshatch men were now, sporting 5-point town marshal stars. Not only had a job been awaiting Glenn Larson, but a pretty girl as well. The first moment he'd lain eyes on the mercantiler's comely daughter, Tiffany Bright, he'd tumbled head over heels. To his astonishment, it had turned out that she'd felt the same way about him, so against Tiffany's family's wishes, they'd been hitched inside of 2 months. Now they had a neat little frame house, which her father had staked them to, on the corner of Main Street and Third. Larson was eager to head home to his pretty wife now, as he'd been away for the past 3 days, looking for the two men who'd stolen stock from a local feed barn, and he knew Tiffany was worried about him. First things first. "All right," he said now, sliding his Winchester carbine from his saddle sheath. "They're over at Carlisle's, you say?" "That's where they are, all right. Carlisle Swamper has been keeping me updated. I wasn't going to make a move on them till you showed up. Not unless they started shooting up the place anyways. I didn't even show myself, knowing that would only provoke them." No, I'm glad you didn't. Hell, Bill Tillman wouldn't make a play on that bunch solo. And there's no point in provoking them and risking other folks' lives." "So you're saying I ain't just a coward?" Henry gave a rare smile. "No more than me, anyway." Larson gave a droll chuckle and slowly, quietly jacked around into his Winchester's action, as though the three brigands might hear the metallic rasp from all the way over at Carlisle Saloon 2 blocks away. "I wouldn't go it alone against them three. I sure will be happy to have them under lock and key. I'll tell you that much, Henry. When I took this job, I didn't think I'd be facing the likes of Talon Cheney." Again, Larson chuckled. It was a nervous chuckle. He'd had the jitters all right, and no mistake. His knees felt a little spongy, and his hands were sweating inside his buckskin gloves. He hadn't felt this nervy since the night before his wedding. Tiffany. He sure hoped he'd made it through this morning in one piece, so he could see his lovely bride again. Thinking of her, of walking over to their little house on the corner of Main and Third, and sitting down to breakfast with her, after he had the three killers under lock and key, calmed his nerves a bit. He kept her image in the back of his mind, and the image of their peaceful, cheerful, sunlit morning kitchen as well, as he said,
All right, Henry, let's do this. Me, I'm ready for breakfast.
Really?
Henry said as they walked east along the main street, keeping to the boardwalks on the north side. I couldn't eat a thing. In fact, I feel a little off my feet.
He winced and pressed a hand to the middle-aged bulge of his belly.
Truth be told, I was just jawing.
Larson glanced at the older man walking beside him. Right now, just the thought of food makes me a little ill.
Yeah, Henry said.
As the two men walked along, spurs clanging softly, boot heels scuffing the worn boards of the sidewalk, Larson saw that the street was deserted. That was strange. It was almost 8 o'clock. Normally, there would be some wagon traffic at this hour. Housewives would be strolling toward Mergen's grocery store for fresh eggs and cream. Children would be tramping in small groups toward the schoolhouse on the town's west end, bouncing lunch sacks off their thighs, the little boys triggering tree-branch guns at each other, or at imaginary Indians, the little girls whispering delicious secrets and giggling. At the very least, a shopkeeper or two would be out sweeping the boardwalks fronting their stores or arranging displays of their goods. There was nothing but soft morning sunshine, a few small birds darting here and there, the light morning breeze kicking up little swirls of dust. Otherwise, the street was deserted. Larson didn't even see one of the town's mongrels heading home after a night in the countryside or hunting along the creek, a dead rabbit in its jaws. Occasionally, he saw a face in one of the store windows as he passed, a shopkeeper stealing a cautious glance into the street before letting a curtain drop back into place and scuttling back into the shadows, wary of catching a stray bullet. Word had gotten around, of course. Three of the nastiest killers ever to haunt the North Platte country were in town. Folks had learned that the three killers were at Carlisle's and that the town's two unlikely lawmen, Glenn Larson and Henry Two Whistles, were going to make play on them. Larson and Two Whistles stopped on the corner of Main Street and Wyoming Avenue and turned to face Carlisle's, standing on the adjacent corner on the other side of the main drag. It was a sprawling, white-painted, clapboard three-story affair with a broad front porch. Larson had never thought the place had looked particularly menacing. Just another saloon, one of three in the little settlement of Dry Fork, though the largest and the one with the prettiest doxies, as well as the best cook. Magnus Carlisle wasn't known to water down his whiskey either, so his saloon and dance hall, which was mostly just a euphemism for whorehouse, was favored by men who could afford his slightly higher prices. Now, however, Larson would be damned if Carlisle's didn't look like a giant powder keg, sporting a lit fuse. He turned to his deputy.
You ready, Henry?
No, Two Whistles said, staring without expression at the saloon across the street.
Yeah, Larson said. Me neither.
Squeezing the rifle in his hands, Larson stepped into the street. Larson and Henry approached Carlisle's, whose porch and front door faced the street corner, the front of the building forming a pie-shaped wedge. A large sign over the porch announced simply Carlisle's in ornate green letters outlined in red and gold. Larson felt his heart picking up its pace. The young man who had been sitting, tipped back in a chair near the saloon's louvered front doors, dropped the chair's front legs to the floor with a quiet thump and rose slowly. That was Eddie Black, the curly-haired young swamper who had been relaying information about the cutthroats to Two Whistles at the jailhouse. Eddie moved forward, and as the two lawmen stepped up onto the boardwalk fronting the porch, he came quickly down the broad wooden steps, eyes blazing anxiously. He was of medium height and skinny,
and he wore a black wool vest over a white shirt adorned with a red cravat stained with beer and the tobacco juice he emptied from the saloon's brass spittoons. He was a little soft in his thinker box, as the saying went, and he sported a bushy thatch of curly red hair. He wasn't really as young as he seemed. Larson had heard he was somewhere in his 30s. But his simple-mindedness made him seem much younger. Breathless, he stopped before the two lawmen and said,
"You gotta take him down, Marshal?"
He grinned delightedly, but also a little fearfully. He was fairly shaken with excitement. Larson and Two Whistles shared a glance. Then the Marshal said, "Well, we're gonna give it a try, Eddie. You'd best wait out here, all right?"
"Oh, don't you worry. I know who them fellas are."
Eddie scampered off to the left along the boardwalk and crouched down behind a rain barrel at the big building's far front corner. He looked cautiously over the top, as if he were expecting hell to pop at any second. The young man's anxiety increased Larson's. He shared another look with Two Whistles and saw that the swamper's demeanor had had a similar effect on the normally stone-faced Ute. Henry's eyes were a little darker than usual. He was also a little pale, and sweat beaded his forehead, just beneath the brim of his black bullet-crowned hat. Larson adjusted the set of his own tan Stetson. Then, opening and closing his hands around his rifle, he and Henry started up the porch steps. There were around a dozen steps, but it felt like a long climb. Finally, the lawmen pushed through the bat wings and stepped into the saloon's cool shadows. Chapter 2
"Damn!"
a voice exclaimed. Jerking his rifle up suddenly, Larson turned to see Magnus Carlyle standing behind the bar just ahead and on the marshal's left. The man had been rolling a quirly, but apparently the two lawmen's sudden appearance in the front entrance had spooked him. He dropped his rolling paper and tobacco onto the polished mahogany bar top. Larson gave a soft sigh of relief and lowered the rifle. Glaring at Larson and Two Whistles, the portly, bespectacled saloon owner said,
"You scared the hell out of me."
Keeping his voice down, Larson said, "Didn't you hear us coming up the steps?"
"No."
Larson hadn't realized that he and Henry had been walking almost as quietly as two full-blood Indian braves on the warpath, but apparently they had. He glanced at Henry, who shrugged and gave a wry quirk of his upper lip. Turning back to the saloon owner, Larson said, "They still upstairs?"
"Yep,"
Carlyle said darkly, looking over the tops of his round, steel-rimmed spectacles.
"Been there all damn night. You sure took your own sweet time getting here."
Larson felt his face warm with anger. "I got back to town as quickly as I could, Mr. Carlyle," he crisply replied. "And he nearly killed his horse doing it," he did not add. "Which room are they in?"
"Third floor. The big room all the way down on the end, right side of the hall. It overlooks the street. You better hope like hell they didn't see you walking over here."
Carlyle narrowed an anxious eye and said,
"They could be laying in there waiting for you."
"We'll handle it," Larson said, as he and Two Whistles walked along the bar, heading for the broad staircase at the room's rear. The young marshal hoped he'd sounded more confident than he felt. Carlyle followed them, running a hand along the bar.
"Take no chances, Glenn. If they get past you, they'll come down here and tear into me. There won't be enough of me left to bury."
"Keep your voice down, Mr. Carlyle," Larson said levelly, keeping his own voice just above a whisper.
"Shoot 'em through the door. Just shoot 'em through the door."
As both lawmen stopped at the bottom of the stairs, Two Whistles turned to the saloon owner and said, "Don't they have a couple girls up there?" Carlyle stared at him thoughtfully and blinked. He looked a little sheepish.
Yeah, I reckon they do. Claudine and Sally Jane. Still, though, fellas, shoot 'em through the door, please. Don't take no chances. Claudine and Sally Jane would understand.
Larson and Two Whistles shared a cynical glance, and then started up the stairs. Behind them, leaning forward and pushing his pudgy right hand against the bar top, Carlyle rasped,
"Shoot 'em through the door! Don't take no chances! Hell, they'll burn the whole town down! You know how they are!"
Larson whipped his head back to the frightened man and pressed two fingers to his lips. Carlyle just stared up at him, looking anguished. Turning forward again, Larson and Two Whistles kept moving slowly up the stairs, keeping their eyes forward. At one point, Larson's right spur jingled. He stopped, glanced at Henry, and then the two men wordlessly, quietly removed the spurs from their boots and left both pairs on that very step. Spurless, they resumed their climb, crossing the second floor landing, then continuing to the third floor. Slowly, quietly, almost holding their breath, they made their way down the third floor hall, which was dingy and sour-smelling, and lit by only the one dirty window at the far end. As they walked side by side, Larson holding his Winchester up high across his chest, Two Whistles holding his Parker the same way, the marshal kept his eyes glued to the last door on the hall's right side. He pricked his ears, listening. The building was as silent as a tomb. There were still no sounds on the street. It was as quiet as Sunday morning, when the whole town was in either of the two churches, the Lutheran or the Catholic. A door clicked on the hall's right side. The lawmen stopped suddenly. Larson's heart quickened as he turned to see a near door open. A girl, dressed in a thin cotton wrap, stepped into the hall. Then, seeing the two gun-wielding men before her, she stopped and gasped, her eyes widening.
"What in holy blazes is going on?"
she said, way too loudly. Her words echoed around the previously silent hall.
"Shh!"
both Larson and Two Whistles said at the same time, pressing fingers to their lips. The girl looked as though she'd been slapped. Larson dipped his chin to indicate the door at the end of the hall. The girl turned her head to stare in that direction, then, appearing suddenly horrified, apparently remembering the three killers on the premises, stepped quickly back into her room and quietly closed her door. Larson stared at the last door on the hall's right side. He prayed it didn't open. Somehow, he had to get those three killers out of the room without getting the doxies killed. If the killers learned that the law was on the way, they might use the girls as human shields. Or they might just start shooting, and the girls would die in the crossfire. Larson couldn't wait for a better time. There might not be a better time. He had to arrest the cutthroats as soon as possible. No citizen was safe as long as the three cold-blooded killers were running free. Now was the best time to take them down, when they were either still asleep or groggy. The two lawmen shared another fateful look, then resumed their slow, deliberative journey. Finally, they found themselves standing in front of the door at the end of the hall. Larson tipped an ear to the panel. The only sounds issuing from inside the room were deep, sawing snores. He looked at Henry and arched a brow, silently asking, "Too good to be true?" The deputy gave a noncommittal shrug. Holding his rifle in his right hand, aiming it just above the knob, Larson placed his other hand on the knob and turned it, very slowly. He winced when the latching bolt retreated into the door with a click. A loud click. At least to Larson's nervous ears it was loud. One of the three snoring men inside the room abruptly stopped snoring and groaned. Larson's heart thumped. He shoved the door open and stepped quickly inside and to the left. Henry stepped in behind him to pull up on his right side, aiming the shotgun straight out from his right shoulder. Inadvertently, Two Whistles kicked a bottle that had been lying on the floor in front of the door. The bottle went rolling loudly across the wooden floor to bounce off a leg of one of the four beds before the two lawmen. The bottle spun, making a whirring sound. Henry looked down at it, stone-faced. Larson sucked a silent breath through his teeth, aiming his Winchester out from his right side. One of the three men, each occupying three of the four beds in the room, lifted his head from his pillow. He was a shaggy-headed man, lying back down on a bed ahead and against the right wall. The man sat partway up, but he didn't open his eyes. He merely groaned, then rolled onto his side, lay his head back down on his pillow, groaned once more, yawned, then resumed snoring, softly. Henry glanced sheepishly at Larson, who gave him a look of silent scolding. Returning his gaze to the three killers, Larson looked them over. A vacant bed lay to his hard right. The other three beds were filled. The two girls lay in each of the two beds on Larson's left, each with one of the other two killers. The near girl appeared to be asleep, lying belly down beside a man with long, coal-black braids and clad in a pair of threadbare long-handles. He also lay belly down. He and the girl were only partly covered by a twisted sheet. The man with the black braids would be the Cuthead Sioux, Black Pot. The man beyond him, in the bed abutting the wall overlooking the street, was Talon Chaney himself. The second girl lay with Chaney, sort of wrapped in his thick arms. No sheet covered them. They were both naked. The girl was not asleep. Her blue eyes peered out through her tangled, tawny hair. They were bright and wide open, cast with terror and desperation. Silently, she begged Larson and Two Whistles for help. Something told Larson she hadn't slept a wink all night. He couldn't blame her. Not one bit. Chaney, who had close-cropped hair and a patchy beard on his blunt-nosed face, lay sort of spooned against the girl from behind, his thick, tattooed arms wrapped around her. His face was snugged up tight to the back of her head, his nose buried in her neck. With each resounding exhalation, the outlaw made the girl's hair billow up around his nose and mouth. Larson shifted his eyes to the right, to the third killer, lying alone in the bed beside Chaney and the girl's bed. That would be hell-raising Frank Beecher, shaggy-headed, tall, hawk-nosed, crazy-eyed, and with a silver hoop ring dangling from his right ear. All three were sleeping like baby lambs. However, these three lambs had guns close to hand. In fact, the room resembled a small arsenal. At least two pistols apiece were buckled to each of the brass bed frames, within an easy reach of each killer. Sheathed bowie knives also hung from bed frames. Rifles, two Winchesters and a Henry, leaned against the walls, also close to each bed. Boxes of shells littered the room's single dresser, cluttered with women's underfrillies. Three piles of tack were carelessly mounted here and there, including saddlebags, likely stuffed with the money these three had taken off the Sundance stage. The room might have looked like an arsenal, but it reeked of a whore's crib in which three drunken men who hadn't bathed in a month of Sundays had been well entertained. Larson chewed his lower lip. How were he and Two Whistles going to get the two girls out of here without arousing the three killers? Maybe he should try to get all of the weapons out of the room first. He nixed that idea. With so many guns and knives littering the room, it would take too long. Doubtless one or more of the killers would...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?